This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. And today we are going over Always Be My Maybe. If you want to watch this and don't want us to spoil it for you, please pass on this one and we will see you next time.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where we just finished up our Augustation Libations series, and we are on the fifth Tuesday of the month doing Always Be Woo! My Maybe. I am with my enthusiastic cheerleader co-host Tamara Cosio.
Responsible for all the sound effects.
Amazing. Amazing.
And I, thank you. Thank you. That was a crowd, in case you didn't know, a crowd.
Oh, I felt like I was there. COVID? What COVID?
And I am with my cutie California co-host, Corinne.
Ooh.
She's NorCal. I'm SoCal. Won't hold that against her.
We're just like the Sharks and the Jets. We're just going to be snap fighting.
I'm snapping
any moment
again.
Now.
I'm snapping
Me
again.
Me too.
I am so excited about this movie. I am so excited. I am so glad you picked this. This was a Corinne choice.
Yes, it was.
A Corinne especial.
Because I was like, Ali Wong, Randall Park. How can you possibly go wrong? Oh, and Michelle Buteau. I love Michelle Buteau. She is so freaking good.
So I have an artisanally crafted synopsis.
Ooh.
Generated by me.
Tell me more.
Aged to perfection over the last 7 days.
In an oak barrel?
No, steel barrel. Don't like oak.
Oh, you're one of those modern vintners.
I just don't like the oaky. And we are out of Augustation Libation. We're not doing the oaky things anymore.
Okay. I need to get with the present. I'm sorry.
You're still hungover from all the greatness that we did during that month. My synopsis is Sasha, played by the multi-talented Ali Wong, and Marcus, played by the hotness Randall Park, were friends practically their whole lives. They lived next door to each other in a middle-class San Francisco neighborhood and did everything together. They were even each other's first, if you know what I mean.
Ooh.
But a tragic incident placed a painful wedge in their friendship. Years passed, and Marcus was stuck in his ordinary life in San Francisco while Sasha thrived. She became a celebrity chef and traveled all over the country, opening up her signature restaurants, one of which happened to be in her hometown. Fate and Veronica, Sasha's BFF, played by Michelle Buteau, intervened, and Sasha and Marcus were reunited.
Aww.
It was a slow thaw, but eventually their friendship grew into sparks. And the sparks were flying, but they kept getting doused by a celebrity hookup, a ditzy dreadlocked girlfriend, and vastly different lifestyles.
Mm.
Will Sasha and Marcus stay in the maybe zone, or will they move that dial to say yes to love and each other?
Oh.
Find out with us as we retell the delightfully hilarious story of Always Be My Maybe.
Thank you for your artisanally crafted synopsis.
Aged over 7 days.
Yes. You've been preparing for this moment.
Oh my God, yeah. I was like, oh, Always Be My Maybe, Ali Wong, Randall Park, hell yeah, I am here for it. Do you have some fun facts for us, Corinne?
Why, yes I do. A roller coaster of fun facts, except it's actually not all that exciting, but I will tell you a few things.
So should I put my arms down? Since we're not doing the roller coaster.
Because it's actually fun facts, but still, good enough fun facts. The movie was written by the two stars, Ali Wong and Randall Park. And when Randall asked Ali to write the script with him, she thought that he just wanted him to write the script. But then he was like, no, I want you to be in it with me. What? Thus, they became the stars of the movie. They wanted to channel a bit of Boomerang and When Harry Met Sally when they wrote the movie.
Boomerang! I love Boomerang!
I've never seen Boomerang.
We may have to fix that one fifth Tuesday.
We may. That would probably be your fifth Tuesday, but I would jump on board that boomerang train. That's about Australians, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. No. No, it's not.
I'm kidding.
It has Eddie Murphy. It has David Alan Greer. It has Martin Lawrence. It's got Tisha Campbell. No, yep, Tisha Campbell's in it. And
I love her.
Oh, Halle Berry. Hello, Halle Berry. Has not aged. What does that woman use?
Beautiful. There's obviously a picture of her in an attic somewhere looking really disturbing. So when they wrote the script, they wrote Keanu Reeves into the script as their, like, dream guy. And they gave it to his manager, and he read the script, and he was like, yes, I'm in.
Was it Randall and Allie's dream guy together? Like, did they have a consensus and decide that Keanu Reeves was the quote-unquote dream guy?
Well, he was their dream guy for that role. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, both. He encompasses all the dreamy guy in as, yeah.
Yeah. They wrote it in being like, he's the perfect one. He's the one we want. Ali Wong said, I'm so smart. I got to write a script where I got to kiss Daniel Day-Kim and Keanu Reeves.
She's a smart cookie. I'm very jealous.
And, dun dun dun, Randall Parks wrote the music. He was in a band in his youth. And the best fun fact of all, the woman who played the Diana Ross impersonator has been in over 20 Hallmark movies. Yes, we are even tied into Hallmark on this month. Yeah. And there's actually another guy who played a prince in some other things in some Hallmark movies who had a smaller role. But yeah.
Oh, I am IMDBing her later.
Are you ready to bring us on the journey that is Always Be My Maybe?
Do, 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 do. Let's jump right in.
Do, 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 do,
do, do, do, do. We are in San Francisco, circa 1996. We see 11-year-old Sasha. She's a latchkey kid. Hello, 90s. How I miss you.
Oh, memories.
She lets herself... latchkey kid. Here, pointing at myself emphatically.
I loved being a latchkey kid. It was a maz. Freedom!
Mm-hmm.
Freedom!
Except when you're a latchkey kid with your older sisters, you don't get to choose anything.
Mm. Oh, yeah, my older sister wasn't around, so, you know, I killed her off.
Mine was.
No.
Oh, my God. People are going to start believing you if you keep saying that.
She was gone at, like, boarding school for a bunch of my latchkey kidness.
Oh, yeah. Lucky. She lets herself into her apartment, and there is a message on the answering machine. The parents are going to be home late. They're working at the store, and she is instructed to fix herself dinner and not to watch TV.
Mm.
She goes to the kitchen and artisanally crafts some rice and Spam and adds a little extra flourish by sprinkling sesame seeds over the rice and adding a paper umbrella to the plate.
Aww.
She sits in the living room and, of course, puts on the motherfucking TV.
Yeah, she did.
Because your parents can't tell you to not watch TV if they're not there.
Exactly.
Screw that noise.
My parents did, and I would, like, work my way around it.
Yeah. Dude, you're not here. Guess what? You're not here. You don't get to tell me if I can or can't watch TV. When the doorbell rings, she goes to answer it, and it's Marcus. He asks excitedly, Do you want some soup? My mom wants me to ask if you want soup. She always makes too much. And then I have to take it to school in a thermos. And no one wants to sit next to the kid with the soup thermos except other kids with soup thermoses. Sasha says nothing and responds by closing the door in his face.
Mm.
Marcus stares at the front door looking confused and bewildered when she opens it back up cackling. Oh my God, what if I really did that? I just thought you did do that, he said solemnly. And she follows him down the front stoop stairs and says, I would never do that. You're my best friend. Marcus, as it winds up, lives right next door. His family is Korean, and you can tell Sasha spends a lot of time there. Marcus's parents are obviously fond of her, and it shows. The dad jokes around with her, and Marcus's mom shows her how to make kimchi and dumplings and all kinds of delicious things.
Mm.
That night, while they're all eating around the dinner table, Marcus asks his dad for money so he and Sasha can go out since it's Friday night. Dad hesitates with a serious look on his face and then smiles and reaches for his wallet. Aww, next, we see the two 11-year-olds running down the dark streets of San Francisco. Ah, the 90s. No one cared less about their kids than perhaps the 70s and 80s. We get a full montage of them walking along the Golden Gate Bridge, eating Pockies on a cable car, getting their pictures put in one of those looking glass thingies. Do you remember those looking glass thingies, Corinne?
Oh, we had a picture of us in one of those. Yeah.
I still have it from Great America.
Yes. God, we were circa looking hot.
The 90s.
That was like one of the best
look so good.
Pics of both of us together.
I wish there was a way to blow it up, like to take it out of the little looking glass thing into like an 11 by 14 and just like frame it on both of our walls. Marcus's dad must have hooked him up because they have a full evening and a full friendship in the years to follow. We see a montage that goes on to show them a little older, just as Wayne and Garth from Wayne's World for Halloween, cooking with Marcus's mom, eating at a local diner together, Sasha supporting Marcus at one of his live shows, and finally, in 2003, the montage screeches to a halt. In 2003, they're both 18-ish, and Marcus is showing Sasha how to fish off the SF Pier, and she is not loving it because she wants to do more than just cast her pole and wait. She asks if they can go catch a hamburger instead, when Marcus's dad comes up from behind them looking extremely distraught. They both know something bad has happened, and all Dad can say is, there's been an accident. Next, we see that Marcus's mom's passed away. They're having the wake in his childhood home, and the mood is somber. Dad is slamming shelves. He is lost. He can't find the coffee filter. He doesn't know where his wife kept them. Sasha sits in the next room, not knowing what to do. They're all mourning. A little while later, Marcus is despondent, alone in his room, and Sasha knocks on the door and says, "Hey, let's go out." They must have been less imaginative when they were kids because they sit in his car on a deserted dark street. Sasha is trying to sing the D'Angelo song on the radio very badly.
You didn't go parking when you were a teen?
I did. I actually put down the Lower Bay Area parking makeout point. It used to be called Vista Point, and I was going to mention it and then thought better of it and just glossed over it. That's why I hesitated, because I'm like, yes, I knew. But it's like there were such kids, like they did all kinds of fun stuff as kids, and they were like in cable cars and running around and by the bridge, and then they're just in a car singing D'Angelo.
Because you're sad that your mom has died. You're not going to go in like a big rave.
I would want to forget my troubles. Oh. I would want to eat Pockies on a cable car rather than sit in a car on a dark street, wallowing in my sadness.
Yeah, but if that dark street could get you nookie, what would you say then?
Fair point. Sasha doesn't know the lyrics to the D'Angelo song, but she's faking it so emphatically that she makes Marcus laugh. "You don't know the words," he accuses, and she smiles. "It's nice to see you laugh again," she says. There's a pregnant pause, and then she kisses him, and it's a good one. But then she immediately pulls away and apologizes when he stiffens up and gets a surprised look on his face. I don't know why I did that. I'm so sorry. But Marcus is not. He smooshes his face into hers, and they are full on making out in the front seat of his Toyota Corolla. Corinne, do you think that car had a coochie cooler?
No, I don't. The coochie cooler car was the next level up that I had. It was a Toyota Camry. Ugh. Only the best.
I did not mean to confuse you with the Camry over the Corolla. I'm so sorry, Corinne. Forgive me, please. They are full on making out in the front seat of the Toyota Corolla, which is a feat in itself. She climbs on top of him and they shimmy to the back seat. They full on did it. They had sex. They did the deed. And they lay tangled together in the back seat in the awkward post-coital aftermath.
Oof.
"Well, where'd you get that condom?" she asks. Seventh grade, he answers matter-of-factly. "We had this sex ed class and this lady came for a whole day to show us how to use them. She put them on a banana." Sasha ponders. Did you practice on a banana at home? Nope. I didn't need a banana. They were silent until Sasha admits, "Marcus, your car smells like Parmesan cheese." "Yeah," he agrees. "That's because I have a bunch of it in my glove box. The cheese must have made them hungry because they go to Burger King, but things are so weird." Marcus tries to put his arm around her, but she says, "Oh, don't, you don't have to do that." And he asks, why are you acting so weird and breathing all hard? And she tells him, that's just how hard I breathe. And he says, well, I know that now.
Ew.
While he's trying to be all cute. But it just grosses Sasha out. And she defensively tells him that she had sex with him. Yeah. I know how hard you breathe.
Winky, winky.
In the middle of a Burger King with the guy waiting to take your order looking on. Hot. Sasha defensively tells him that she had sex with him so he wouldn't be going to college as a virgin. I was planning on lying, he says. And besides, I'm not going to college anymore. Sasha's all, excuse me? When did you decide that? Marcus, I know you're hurting because you lost your mom and I'm hurting too, but... He interrupts her. You don't know how I feel. She wasn't your mom just because you were at my house all the time eating our food because your parents didn't care enough to be around. Ooh. Don't try to pretend like you know how I feel.
Ooh.
Fucked up.
Marcus, fuck you.
Yeah, right? I know you're hurting, but you don't got to lash out at other people like that. Mm-mm. That's a fucked up thing to say.
Mm-mm. She was the equivalent of her mom, basically, you know?
Yeah, and that's even more fucked up to say, like, it doesn't matter to you because you weren't blood. So don't pretend like, you know, you were special or even, like, mattered to this family, essentially. Like, super fly fucked squared. That was all bad.
Mm-hmm.
All bad, Marcus.
Yes, I agree.
Sasha gets the most hurt look on her face. Says, you are such an asshole, and storms out.
Yes! Go, Sasha. When she storms out, she storms off into the year 2019. Yay!
That was a hard storm off.
I know.
Wow. Right into the future.
Right into the future. We've now leapt forward to the exciting year of 2019. There isn't a pandemic in sight. It was a time of blissful ignorance. Sasha's restaurant, Knives and Mercy, is bustling and hip. Sasha has established herself as a chef and a big name in the restaurant world. We are in the very busy kitchen of Sasha's restaurant, and Veronica, is she her manager? Assistant? Manager? Manage assistant?
I don't... manage assistant sounds good, because they were friends, right?
Yeah.
And that seems kind of fucked up for her to be her assistant. Like, hey, you're my BFF. I love you. Come serve me.
Well,
I'm going to say manage assistant.
I don't think that that's fucked up because you're like taking your friend along and you're working for someone that you like, you know?
Making a face because it's just so problematic. Okay. Sure.
I'd be your assistant. I can tell that she's really looking forward to that day when I become her assistant. This is good. This is good. Her childhood friend and very pregnant manager/assistant is trying to have a conversation with her as Sasha rushes through the kitchen, giving orders to the sous chefs. Veronica says, you need to be in San Francisco permanently by the end of this week. You're opening a restaurant in 2 months, and you need to be there to guide this project home. If you're not, you'll have a place to stay. I got you a sweet house. Sasha absentmindedly says, sounds good, as she keeps on tearing through the kitchen, shouting orders on dumpling prep and other important food things. Veronica continues, your mom wants to pick you up from the airport, and I told her I was getting you a car. Then she yelled and hung up on me. Sasha pauses as Veronica helps her out of her chef's whites. Underneath, Sasha has a beautiful red dress. She sighs and rolls her eyes. I think my parents wake up in a cold sweat thinking about me having to tip someone. Ugh. That's why I learned how to cut my own hair. Veronica praises Sasha's beautiful long black hair that's pulled up into a high pony. You can't tell, Veronica says. Suddenly, a super handsome Korean-American man comes walking up to them in a beautiful gray suit and black button-down shirt. Hey, he casually greets them with a smile. Sasha turns around and greets him with a kiss, a hallmark peck, not a real kiss.
Did not notice the distinction.
Yes, because apparently, in this movie, they went to Hallmark kissing school for part of it.
What does a Hallmark pet kiss look like? Is it like lips out stiff, like barely touching, or is it air kisses? Mwah, mwah.
Lips out, do a little peck, move on. Why have any passion in your relationship? Nope.
as little body touching as possible. I got you. I got you. Okay.
He looks at her with loving eyes and says, "You look beautiful. You ready?" And indeed, Sasha is. Next thing we know, she and Hot Guy are walking down a red carpet at a Project Smile benefit. They're smiling for the camera, and it's obvious that Sasha is the one they're here for. The entertainment news broadcaster narrates, "We're here with Sasha Tran, the creative Epicurean mind behind L.A. hotspot Knives and Mercy. She's with her fiancé and restaurant developer Brandon Choi." That's when we discover Sasha's engaged, and the hot guy is not Marcus. But we knew it wasn't Marcus to begin with, because he looks nothing like Marcus. The interview turns when the host immediately acknowledges Brandon and suggests that Sasha gets special treatment over his other clients because they're engaged. Brandon doesn't deny it, and yes, Miss Host, Sasha totally slept her way to the top. That's how she got to where she is now, fucker. Brandon gives Sasha a kiss, and the cameras go crazy. It's after the benefit, and they're being driven home. Both of them on their phones, not really engaged with each other at all. She tries to start some conversation, but he just keeps on texting away. So, yes, he's gorgeous, but I'm beginning to think he might be a dick.
Nodding emphatically.
Next, we're in San Francisco, and wait for it. Marcus, grown-ass man, is still living with his dad. He's in his childhood bedroom, which hasn't changed much, and is smoking weed and pop-locking in front of the mirror.
I imagine that's where I would be if I was still in San Jose.
Smoking weed and pop-locking in front of the mirror.
Yes, to some freestyle music. Let the music play. We will get away. I'm pop-locking for you. I'm pop-locking for you. Broken arm. Broken arm.
It's beautiful. Marcus has joined his dad's HVAC business, and it's obvious that they have an easy relationship with each other and have settled into their own rhythm. Over breakfast, Marcus gives his dad a shot in the arm while they chat about the gentrification of San Francisco via the transition of an old record store turned into a hipster artisan roast beef sandwich place in the Mission. After that pie slice of life, we get another serving of the life that is Sasha and Brandon. They are at home, not in San Francisco, but still in L.A. Brandon is seated in a modern-looking white chair on one side of the living area of a beautiful home with floor-to-ceiling windows, giving them a great view of the lit-up city at night. However, they're in Canada, America, so it's not really accurate, but Sasha is sitting on the other side on a matching couch, is looking at wedding bouquets, and she holds up a pic on her computer, pointing it towards Brandon. A white woman in all white and black lipstick is holding a giant singular black rose that has about a foot and a half circumference. She says enthusiastically, "I'll do for black flowers what I did for fish sauce and ice cream."
Ew.
You want some of that?
No. No, I don't. I got a bad taste in my mouth now.
Salty and sweet.
Sure. You taste it. Tell me all about it.
No, no. I am not into the artisanal ice cream flavors. I've been to Salt and Straw. I have tried them, and I am not shishy enough for that business. Brandon, in a khaki-colored tracksuit, looks up from his laptop. "Oh, didn't I mention to you? I think we should pause this whole thing." Sasha, confused, responds, "Pause what?" Brandon casually says, "Our wedding. I've got to go on a business trip to India with Jose Andres. I'll be there for several months, and I think it would be great for our relationship if we were alone together."
So a breakup.
"When we eventually reunite..." See, they're going to reunite. "When we eventually reunite..." The scene changes, and now Sasha is talking with Veronica in Knives and Mercy. Sasha says, "He'll be the best husband he can be, so he's really doing me a favor." Veronica looks at her with the same eyes that Tam is giving me right now.
With my mouth slightly open and a what the fuck?
Yeah. She's been fed a pile of shit, is what I'm thinking. Veronica looks at her with a stop the shit look. "Fuck off. Really? Are you serious?" she says. Sasha confidently continues with Brandon's snow job. "He just left for India for 6 months, and while he's there, we're going to see other people, and that way, when we're back together, we're going to be choosing each other. Veronica is stunned into silence and purses her lips with a surprised look on her face. She responds. Sasha smiles a big smile. This couldn't come at a more perfect time. I'm so lucky to have a man like Brandon looking out for me and our relationship. I'm going to go and do inventory. And she walks off to the walk-in fridge and starts to cry.
I agree with Veronica. My lips are so small right now. They're so small.
When she's like, I could totally see you doing the same thing.
A short while ago, and you're like, I would be your assistant.
You're like, no, you wouldn't. I value our friendship too much for that.
That too. I care about you too deeply to be in any close area of like assistant boss. No, it makes me cringe just thinking about it. Oh. Veronica's in the house she rented for Sasha. It is a huge, modern, tri-level place with redwood walls and tons of windows nestled in the hills of San Francisco. Can Not we really. Say expansive? Okay. Well, I'm going to say it's expansive. It would look like San Francisco, quote-unquote.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's very, so posh and expensive. Yes.
Oh, God. It was like $10,000 a month for that place, probably, easily, if not more.
Easily.
The doorbell rings, and it's Marcus and his dad, full on in their heating and AC garb. Veronica knew who she was hiring, but it takes Marcus's dad a beat to recognize her. And then Marcus in turn. Oh my God, he says, you look so great. I see you got rid of all your piercings. And she just looks at him and blinks and says, not all of them. She doesn't have any piercings in her face, but I can speculate wildly about where there are piercings. There was an awkward pause, and Marcus quickly adds, oh, well, congrats on the place and your baby. Oh, she says knowingly, it's not my place. Just as Sasha rounds the corner saying, the counters need to be lowered. I'm going to need a step stool just to reach them. Sasha and Marcus's eyes lock, and years of memories flood back. Marcus stumbles over a greeting about how much time has passed, and Sasha just regards him coolly. There is still a lot of hurt that needs to be dealt with, but it'll have to wait because here comes Dad again, a.k.a. Mr. Kim. Oh my God, Mr. Kim! Sasha gushes. How are you? They share a warm hug, and she looks genuinely pleased to see him. How do you not age? She accuses. Well, he offers, I wash my face with shampoo. I wonder if that's Halle Berry's secret. And they laugh. And he adds, we never thought you'd come back here. You're like our own Asian Oprah. How much money do you make anyways? Sasha chuckles uncomfortably. And when her eyes meet Marcus, he nods and says, he's serious. Dad comments on Sasha's hot fiancé, Brandon, and how he thought he was just too old for her. He's motherfucking 50. Brandon, her fiancé, is 50 and he looks like that hotness? Damn. They chit-chat a little more before the guys go off to work on the heating and air conditioning of the house that she's renting. That night, Sasha calls Veronica about her curse your son about inevitable betrayal. What? Veronica protests. I thought it was just going to be Mr. Kim working on your house. And Sasha stops her. It's literally called Harry and Son, Veronica. Well, she says dismissively, I thought, you know, like the sun in the sky and all that. Your plan is not going to work, Sasha informs her. Why is that? Her pal responds. Because he's not an asshole.
Oh.
And Sasha corrects her. He is so an asshole. He's just a stealth asshole. Like those white-haired bearded guys that ask you how you're doing on the street and you legit think they care. But then you see that they have a clipboard and they're just trying to petition you for some crazy cause. Ugh.
I definitely give Marcus stealth asshole points.
Yeah, you want to like him and root for him, and then he just does stuff, and you're like, Marcus, you stealth asshole.
Yeah, he's like 80 to 90% like really good guy, and then he's like 20 to 10% stealth asshole.
Yeah. I think he starts off 80, and then as the movie goes, he gets closer to the 90. Like, the stealth assholeness of him shrinks a little bit. Like a penis in cold weather.
That's beautiful. I love your simile.
The next day, Sasha's on the phone talking business about her new restaurant while the stealth asshole is up on a ladder screwing a vent in. He can hear the whole exchange, and when she hangs up, he says, "Doesn't that get tiring?" "What?" she asks. "Your phone voice." "That's not you," and he mimics. "Yes, that sounds spectacular. Let's do that deal." And Sasha accuses, "You sound like Count Chocula." "Well, it's not you," he confirms. She argues that he hasn't known her in a long time when Veronica comes in cutting the tension with some breakfast burritos. Ooh. Veronica admits that she already had a couple and leaves the rest of them with the two frenemies. Sasha says, "Okay, that sounds lovely," to which Veronica admonishes, "Oh, don't use your phone voice on me, bitch." While Marcus looks on and smiles. Eventually, Marcus and his dad finish with the house. Mr. Kim shows Sasha how the new thermostat works, and she thanks him and gives him a very heartfelt goodbye hug. Aww. In kind of waves at Marcus. I'm just going to call Mr. Kim Dad. Before they walk out, Dad says, "Oh, hey, you should come to Marcus's show tonight." "Hello, Peru?" Sasha asks. "They're still together?" "Yep," Mr. Kim confirms. 16 years strong. Marcus starts to protest, but his dad doesn't listen and goes to get her a flyer.
Yeah.
Marcus shares, "It's not all the original band, but most of the people she still knows except for Ginger, the new drummer who grew up in the Bay Area and had three moms." "Wow," Sasha chimes in. "Their tampon bill must have been through the roof." Just then, Mr. Kim comes back and hands her the obviously kinkoed flyer. She takes it but says, "Oh, you know, my schedule's super busy tomorrow." "Well," Dad says, "if anything changes." "You know," he adds, "I'm surprised you two lost touch. You used to be so close, and I almost thought you'd wind up together." He waves a friendly goodbye while Sasha and Marcus awkwardly part ways.
Aww.
They have so many awkward partings. It's just like the first part of the movie is just like clunky goodbye after clunky goodbye. That night, Sasha cyberstalks Marcus's band Hello Peril, and Marcus stalks Sasha's culinary career. After he reads a recent article about her, he pulls out the view-looky thing that he got on that long-ago day when we first saw them and looks into it. And now you could see that the little boy in the image seems pretty smitten with the girl. And Marcus smiles at the memory of that night.
Aww.
The next day, Sasha and Veronica are on location of the new restaurant, which is under some heavy construction. There is a designer there who is giving her vision for the space, which includes a crap ton of gooby chairs.
Did you look up to see what those looked like?
And I was going to, and I just was like, "Oh my God, what does a gooby chair look like?" Nope, I didn't.
It looks,
but I'm
like,
going to now.
It looks like two rose petals are put together, one for the seat and one for the back. So it's kind of like a modern looking
awful
chair with a scoopy back and a scoopy seat.
I hate it.
So a gooby chair for your birthday. Christmas.
Sorry. And then it's just going to be like that one thing that we keep leaving accidentally at each other's houses. You forgot your gooby chair. Oh, darn. Then I run out and leave it there.
You're coming over for Christmas? I'm getting you a gooby chair.
You better not. You better not. I will be so, I'm just going to drag it out to this driveway and be like, "You did this on purpose." But it's decorated for the holidays. Most people decorate trees. You got a gooby chair to decorate. Season's greetings. Just then, there's an emphatic knocking on the outside doors of the restaurant, and it's Sasha's parents. Veronica posted on social media that she was in town, so they decided to stop by and check her place out. When Sasha lets them in, her father chides, "We were supposed to pick you up from the airport." "I know," Sasha sighs, "but I just got a car service." "What?" Dad says, disbelieving. Did you have to tip?" "No," Sasha answers matter-of-factly. "I jumped out of the car once it slowed down." Mom shares that they are also having a birthday party next weekend and wanted to invite her. "Yes," Dad agrees. "We have so much free time now. I didn't think I was going to like retirement, but I do. Yesterday, I put a bird feeder in a tree."
"Aww."
That's great," Sasha says. "But I'm going to be really busy here planning and getting things together for the restaurant. And when I finish here, I'm going to go leave to New York to do it all over again." "Well, Her dad says, tell me when and I'll have my East Coast friend come pick you up from the airport there. Then you won't have to pay no tip. Sasha's noncommittal, and she is obviously less happy about the visit than her parents are.
Aww.
I know, that always makes me kind of sad.
I know. They're trying.
And you understand the conflict. Yes.
Don't blame her for being a bitter Betty.
It's like a double-edged sword because you feel for the parents and you feel for Sasha.
Yeah. Well, the parents need to have a conversation, you know, and they're traditional. They're not going to be having that conversation. And Sasha's just going to keep on putting them off. So heartbreaking.
Vicious cycle.
Vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. That evening, Sasha's at home alone, eating dinner, all alone, in a very posh, large house, all by herself.
Alone.
She sees the Hello Peril flyer on the table and decides, in the depths of her loneliness, fuck it, I'm gonna go. Before the concert, Hello Peril is having a band meeting in the dressing room. The small red room has some random chairs scattered about, but what is really prominent is the 3-foot-tall box that Quasar, the fourth band member, is standing in front of. He starts talking. Y'all are going to be so happy you left me in charge of merch. Our shirt sales have been fire. Marcus excitedly chimes in. Ooh, how many shirts have sold? 7! My lucky number! Everyone's face falls, and Quasar continues unfazed. I also got these amazing tennis balls with our name on them, he says, pointing to the giant box. Tony, Marcus's bestie, and the one member of the band that is actually interested in going somewhere with it, says, you know, if we performed at Southeast, a bigger venue, we might be able to sell some of this merch. Marcus, have you called them to set something up? Marcus quickly responds, nah, I don't like Southeast. They're on the other side of San Francisco, and nobody knows us over there. Oh, you hear that? I think we're up. Come on, let's go. Tony frustratedly responds, "Ugh!" And they head onto stage. Hello Peril walks onto stage, and on one side of the stage is Quasar, Japanese-American, the tallest with a shaved head, rocking a Ben Davis style and playing the bass. Tony, an Indian-American, is on the other side with a sweet red guitar, rocking out with his short hair, 5 o'clock shadow, and wearing a black t-shirt, jeans and jean jacket, and an Irish flat cap. In the back center is the solo woman of the band, Ginger. She's wearing a large red sweater, jeans, and is tearing up the drums, while Marcus is also in front, rocking a Ben Davis look with a white thermal underneath. Both Quasar and Marcus are channeling the early 2000s look hard, while Tony and Ginger are a bit more on the contemporary side in their look, saying, yeah, we haven't completely gotten stuck in a time loop yet. Veronica and Sasha push their way to the front of the club and look on trepidatiously. Is this going to be a shit show? The crowd that's standing in the tiny club is getting restless, and then Marcus steps off to the side and stands in front of a keyboard, and they begin to play. Hello, this is how we greet you. This is what we say every day when we meet you, says Marcus as the band is throwing down a jazzy, cool vibe behind his sweet rhymes. And it's so good. Veronica is getting her pregnant groove on while Marcus and Sasha make smiley faces at each other from the stage to audience and back. After the show is over, Sasha and Veronica are talking about her upcoming baby shower while waiting for Marcus out front of the club. They're interrupted by Tony, who greets them warmly, looks at Veronica and says, ooh, that baby's not mine, is it? Ba-dum-bum. Veronica replies, nope, it's my fiance's, Denise. Tony plays it cool, but so not cool, throws down the I have black friends card by saying, well, I'm an LGBTQIA plus ally, so thank you for your service. Yes. Everybody cringes at the awkwardness of it all. I love that look on your face.
My lips are so small again for the second time in this. I can't, like, what the fuck?
Tamara once again was like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. twitch.
My mouth
twitch.
Has fully disappeared.
Veronica gives him the, did you really just say that, eyes? And she says, on that note, I've got to go home and make sure I haven't dropped my placenta. Bye. Tony yells after her, love is love. Marcus looks at Tony. Really, Tony? And then he pivots. So, y'all want to grab a bite? Tony's down for it, but Sasha says no when suddenly a bundle of energy arrives screaming on the scene and hugging Marcus. You killed it, she says. And the she is Jenny, Marcus's girlfriend, the Korean-American activist with a head piled full of locks. Sasha looks on confused and Tony is like, sorry, I've actually got to go. Jenny starts kissing on Marcus passionately while Marcus works on breaking away from her. Finally, he does. Jenny, this is Sasha. Sasha, Jenny. Jenny turns around, looks at Sasha. What? Is that Sasha Tran? Let me cook for you. You've got to come over. She hugs Sasha enthusiastically, tossing a mouthful of her hair into Sasha's mouth. Sasha may have a mouthful of hair, but she also has her pocket popcorn out because this is all too good to miss. Marcus explains to Jenny that Sasha can't come because she's got an early morning, but Sasha flips the script. You know what, Jenny? I'd love to come. Marcus gets a frantic look in his eyes. Really? He says, and next thing you know, we're at Jenny's apartment and she is placing a plate of what looks like spaghetti and cut up hot dog in front of Sasha. They're all seated around a low table on the floor, sitting on pillows. Now, it seems that it's a pretty simple dish to make, but Jenny puts her own twist on it. The sauce is matcha powder and ketchup.
Oh, no.
You want to go over to Jenny's for some food?
No. I'm picturing the taste and the flavors melding together and... Oh, what even possessed somebody to put those things together and think it's good?
Oh, when I saw it go down in front of them, I was like, okay, no, this is not any kind of gourmet meal by any stretch of the imagination, but totally edible. And then I heard what the actual combination was and I was like, oh no.
Fuck no.
Both Sasha and Marcus find it to be inedible, but they're both expertly pocketing the food and heaping praise on Jenny. Jenny is thrilled that Sasha likes her cooking. Now, with full confidence, she says, I was a polyam before Marcus and I got married, but here we are 5 months later, and it's just amazing. Sasha spits out her pocket popcorn. Y'all are married? Marcus looks super uncomfortable. No. Jenny looks at Sasha with dreamy eyes. Not in the heteronormative sense. We're spiritually and sexually married. One night we looked deeply into each other's eyes and it was like our souls swapped places. And it was then that we knew. Sasha nods affirmatively. She says, taking a note from Tamara and Veronica.
Noncommittal. That's the best way.
Eventually, the evening ends and Marcus gives Sasha a ride home in the very same Toyota Corolla that they made sweet love in. Except the doors only unlock with a Slim Jim, the flat, long metal tool that people use to break into cars. You'd think with all the money he saves living at home, he'd at least have bought a new car, but nope. Marcus is much like Han Solo, frozen in carbonite, except instead of carbonite, he's frozen in time.
I was thinking the same damn thing. I'm like, you know you don't pay rent, fool. Why can't you just get a car or at least fix your door?
For real. Like, it doesn't need to be some kind of crazy, you know, baller car. It just needs to be something that, you know... You can open and close the doors easily. on.
Yeah. Before we move on, I just want to say that I thought Quasar was very hot, too.
Oh, he is.
I like a Quasar. Hot. I like it a lot.
And, you know, he's a musician, too. His actual name is Lyrix Born. And he is a
big... I like Quasar better.
I think Quasar really fits him well. But he's a Bay Area guy.
Oh, that checks out. The next day, the restaurant renos are in full swing, and Sasha's talking to the designer and sees a copy of the menu and likes it, but adds, you know what? Put it on rice paper. White people eat that shit up. The designer raises her hand and says, guilty! Sasha sees Veronica downstairs and points to the designer with a what the fuck look on her face. Veronica mouths, I know. But instead of smack talking about the clueless girl, she says, hey, Netflix just called and wants you to cater a wrap party at the Fairmont. Sasha asks seriously, for the crown? But no, it's for a Kevin James flick where he's playing a young Benjamin Franklin. I think that's Kevin James because when I first wrote it down, I put Kevin Hart and I'm pretty sure that's wrong.
I didn't write it down, so I have no idea, but I'm going for whatever you say. I believe you, even if it is Kevin Hart.
I believe if they have Kevin Hart playing a black Benjamin Franklin, I would be very, very interested in seeing that.
As would
Kevin
I.
James. Anyways, but whoever, Kevin, someone, something, somewhere, is playing a young Benjamin Franklin, and Sasha just shrugs her shoulders and says, yeah, screw it, okay. She is in because a Netflix rap party is a Netflix rap party.
Mm-hmm.
Later, Sasha's at home cyber-stalking her ex, who's living his best single bachelor life with Padma Lakshmi in India. Stupid, beautiful, talented Padma, she huffs. Just then, she gets a message ping from Mark, which is a link to an article which reads, how to grow dreadlocks if you're an Asian. She giggles and writes back, thanks, it was keeping me up all night. Ping! It pings on his computer and he sees it and smiles. And then she messages, will you and your dad be around tomorrow afternoon? There's a party at my parents' house. He is down, just as Tony is best. He says, are you listening to me? Or are you messaging somebody else? Marcus is still in his childhood room with Tony and they're having a band meeting. And Marcus's mind was 1,000% somewhere else. To deflect, he accuses, say, why didn't you go out to eat with me the other night? Tony hums and haws, but can't come up with a moderately decent excuse. So Marcus offers, yeah, whatever. You can't remember the lie you're about to tell. Anyways, can we quit and smoke weed now? I don't want to disrespect the process, though. Tony agrees that that's a fine idea, and the meeting's adjourned so they can both partake in a little toki-toki. The next day, Sasha goes to her cousin's party, and it's in full swing. It's a backyard soiree, but the kids are running around and adults are mingling. There's music bumping. Sasha sees her cousin Barry and goes to give him a hug. Thanks for inviting me, she says. No problem, he answers. It's always great seeing my famous cousin. Sasha looks around at what her parents organized. There are decorations, a clown making balloon animals, a bouncy castle, and a petting zoo? She looks a little peeved and said, this is all so much. Do you know what I got for my 8th birthday? Flip-flops. Well, Barry admits, they've been great godparents to Leah. They even hired a Diana Ross impersonator that's obviously been on Hallmark movies, according to Corinne. Good for Leah, she retorts. Besides, what's Diana Ross doing at a kid's party? Cheaper than Beyonce, I guess, Barry shrugs. A little later, Marcus walks in to hear Veronica and Sasha in the living room of the party house. Veronica shares that she's having a gender-neutral reveal party, so she expects all the baby clothes gifts to be gray. Sasha sees him, and you can tell they're both excited. But yet again, there is an awkward interaction, and she lets Marcus know that his dad's already there, chatting up and flirting with the Diana Ross impersonator. They go outside to put Marcus's present on the gift table, and he says, I didn't know what to get, so I just got Legos. Oh, Veronica says, well, that's better than what she brought. Hey, Sasha argues, kids love chocolate. Oh, really? Veronica says. Matcha-covered dark chocolate with smoked sea salt? Yes, she confirms through clenched teeth, because kids know that shit is delicious.
You know she just has a room that's rings. Just full of those that she grabs on the way out to any event where you're supposed to take a gift.
I totally would do the same thing. I want to try all that special delicious chocolate and then be able to have it to give away as free gifts to people at the last minute when I don't have time to shop. Nothing wrong with that. Just then her phone rings and it's her ex, Brandon. Dun, dun, dun. And she takes it inside so she can speak to him privately. She answers the phone and Brandon gushes about all the ideas he's had since they separated, about taking her business to the next level. Padma was making me breakfast the other day, he says, but she cuts him off. I don't give a shit about what you're saying. You never loved me. It was all business to you. I wasted my prime, productive years on you. She pulls the phone away and gives it the finger and describes to him, I am giving you the finger so hard right now. I hope you get bad karma and come back as a lizard and get stepped on. I hope, she says louder, that you get malaria and shit yourself to death, you shitty piece of shit. Just then, she looks over to her side and realizes that she was shouting all of this near an open window right into the backyard. Ooh. And everyone, kids, adults, goats, all heard her. Ooh. Colorful turn of phrase. The petting zoo keeper says with a look of horror on his face, a little quieter, please. You're scaring the goats. Poor Sasha clutches the phone to her chest and looks at her unintended audience mortified.
After Sasha is done at the birthday party, Sasha and Marcus go to Best Luck Dim Sum, a hole in the wall placed with booth seats. She is fuming. I don't even know what I was thinking. It was like I was involved with a cheap knockoff version of Eric from The Little Mermaid. I had to be so posh around him and never felt like myself. She stares off into the distance. He sure was hot, though, she says longingly, breaking herself out of her reverie. She says, I couldn't even fart in the same room as him. Men say they want a strong woman, but they really don't. I'm going to die all alone in a giant house all by myself. Marcus looks at her with mixed emotions. There, there, he says. Sasha looks at him filled with ire. There, there, that's it? Marcus responds, well, I had more to say at the beginning of your speech, but it went on for so long I kind of forgot it. Sasha looks at him and her face transforms from angry to laughing and smiling. Dork, she says, throwing a chopstick wrapper at him. Just then, their dim sum gets delivered and Sasha says, why'd you pick this place anyways? I know we went here in high school, but the food was bad. Plus, they always gave us bad service because we didn't speak Cantonese. Marcus looks at her. You've got to be kidding me. I eat here twice a week. Try the shrimp hargao. Sasha dips it in some soy sauce and pops it in her mouth. But unlike Jenny's matcha ketchup spaghetti, it's actually... Sasha's face transforms into a look of surprise and delight. This is delicious. Why did I think it was so bad? Marcus responds, because you remember your entire childhood as shit. But not all of it was.
I completely blocked out a good chunk of my childhood. People are like, don't you remember? I'm like, no, blocked it out. Painted it with the big shit brush too and just flushed that shit away.
I also painted a lot of my childhood with a big shit brush as well. So, yay, shit brush childhoods.
Yay. Ugh.
Sasha leans forward. You may be right about the food, but the women here are still giving us the side eye for not knowing Cantonese. Marcus gets a smug look on his face, looks towards the ladies at the counter and waves, hello, ni hao ma. All the women wave back enthusiastically, smiling and responding. Marcus chuckles. I learned it so I could get better service. Just then, a woman comes by with a plate of shumai. Also, sometimes... free shumai, he says triumphantly. Sasha goes to grab one, and the woman who placed the plate on the table moves it away from her and towards Marcus. After lunch, they walk around Chinatown, where Sasha sees a poster for the Cherry Blossom Festival taped to a light pole. Hello Peril's name is prominently featured top and center, way larger than all the other entertainment. Hey, you guys are famous. Marcus plays it off. Yeah, in this neighborhood, Sasha questions him. What happened when we were kids? You wanted to tour the world. Marcus dismisses this. My dad needs me. I'm his caregiver. Sasha responds much more diplomatically than I would have. Harry seems like he can take care of himself. So you never want to leave this community? Like, ever? Marcus responds, this is my home. Everyone I love is here. Everything I need is here. I'm good. Marcus deftly switches the topic.
Okay, I need to know how you would have responded.
Oh.
How would have Corinne responded to that?
Oh, my dad needs me. I'm his caregiver.
Yeah. She would have laughed sinisterly.
Seriously, Marcus? You are not your dad's caregiver. Your dad is doing just fine on his own. As a matter of fact, I think he cooks most of your meals for you and takes care of cleaning most of the house. So in this situation, I would really say he's your caregiver and you're not his.
Burn. Burn.
Yeah, you know me. I've got the subtlety of a neon sign. Ugh, for better or worse. Mainly it's worse. Marcus deftly switches the topic. So, you're single now. What's your next step after Brandon? And Sasha replies, well, I'm definitely going to try dating again. But honestly, if that doesn't work out, she gets a wistful smile on her face and her tone softens. I may just have a baby on my own. Marcus looks at her. You really think you're in a place where you can have a baby on your own? Sasha defensively responds, what's the matter with that? I had no parents. I figure one is better than none. Marcus is incredulous. You had parents. Sasha stops walking and looks at Marcus. I had me. Marcus responds with the equivalent, all right, don't get your panties in a wad. And I'm like, you just don't understand, Marcus. Seriously, Marcus was being taken care of. She was left to her own devices, I'm guessing about 7 days a week while her parents were running the shop. And they were just doing the best that they could, but she didn't have parents growing up.
And Marcus is still getting taken care of, and so he has like...
For real?
No skin in the game, Marcus.
Seriously. I'm like, do you not understand how pivotal your family was in the raising and nurturing of Sasha? Ridiculous.
Oftentimes people that don't get out of their circumstances don't even realize. It's like once you just plop them in the real world, they're like, holy shit, this sucks and is hard. Yeah, yeah, it does and it is. Yeah, yeah.
Sasha looks at him, shakes her head, and says, I've got to go. I've got a wrap party to prepare for. And they awkwardly hug. She pops into her car and drives off. Later that evening, Marcus is sitting at a table by himself and starts texting Sasha at a slam poetry reading. Wish they had stuff like this when we were kids. They did, Marcus. They did. But he never presses send. Instead, Jenny pops on the stage and starts emceeing the evening. On the other side of town, Sasha is at the Fairmont, a fancy hotel, catering the wrap party. She's standing by herself at the counter, off to the side of the crowded room. She starts composing a text to Marcus, asking what he's up to, which she never sends, when suddenly there's a voice behind her. I hear you're responsible for all of this. Sasha looks up from her phone, says, yes, I am. Turns around to see who is talking to her, gets a look of absolute surprise on her face and says, oh my God. And here's our break.
Oh, Eva.
And we're back from our break. Welcome back. When we last saw our fearless heroine, Sasha was at the wrap party and was quite surprised by who was behind her. But we don't get to find out who that is until later. Instead, we end up in some kind of bath place with Marcus and his dad, each lying next to each other on a table with a towel wrapped around their waist. They're getting dead skin sloughed off their body as they talk about life. You know, Marcus's dad says, I've always had my doubts about Jenny. I actually always thought you'd be with Sasha. Marcus says, what are you talking about? Jenny is great. She cares about the community and is so kind. Plus, her hair just absorbs the scent of everything around her. She's like a walking potpourri. Do you have some memories?
I live with the walking potpourri. Yes. No, it's not all it's cracked up to be. my ex smelled a lot of times like a partially burnt piece of charcoal.
That's right, because of all the barbecuing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure, barbecue. That's what it was.
Well, the charcoal, yeah. There's other...
And other things that he burned, and yes. other essences that he burned around him frequently.
Marcus's dad says, "And Sasha is Sasha. There is no one else like her, and you know it." Marcus has been thrown a curveball by his dad, who usually just lets him be. Marcus's dad continues, "Tell her how you feel. You don't want to be filled with regret." Marcus has been given a lot to think about, but will he say something to her? Only time will tell.
Sasha is at an outdoor farmer's market. And what's that farmer's market called again, Corinne?
It's over by City Center, and it's the United Nations Plaza.
The United Nations Plaza Farmer's Market. She's at a stand picking out veggies when she sees Marcus. She goes to give him a hug and says, "I have huge news!" And he says, I have news too. And by the way, thanks for meeting me out here. Oh, look, I was talking to my dad, but Sasha, who's been bouncing up and down the whole time, says, "I can't wait, me first! I met somebody!" She smiles like the cat who ate the canary, and Marcus's face falls. "Wait, when?" he asks. "At that catering event I told you about, and he is amazing. I can't believe that someone like him could be into me, and I don't normally talk about this, but we had the freakiest sex. My toes are curled just thinking of it, and look." She pulls her hair aside to reveal a hickey. "Oh," Marcus grimaces. "You may want to get that looked at." But she just grins and says, "Well, what was your news?" Oh, nothing," he recovers. "I just wanted to know if you wanted to have dinner with Jenny and me." That's what you were talking to your dad about?" she asks. But only waits a beat and adds excitedly, Oh, we can totally go on a double date. Then you can meet him." Marcus looks as if he's holding in a fart.
Poor darling. Thank you for illustrating that look to me, Tam. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. He is tense because this is the last thing he wanted to hear. That's what the holding in a fart look looks like, Corinne, as so illustrated for you earlier by myself. You're welcome. It's nighttime. We are at Maximal Restaurant, a hoity-toity trendy night spot. Sasha, Jenny, and Marcus are all sitting at a table. Marcus eyes the other tables and says, I thought this was a high-end place. He, on the other hand, is wearing a velvet tux circa 1979. And Sasha divulges, rich people aren't into nice clothes anymore. It's all about the $1,000 t-shirts that look like you ripped them off a homeless person. And Jenny's dressed perfectly, she says while nodding in Jenny's direction. Jenny looks at her blankly and asks, So, where's your man? Just as the song Sail by AWOL Nation pumps up. Have you heard that song?
Oh, yeah.
The song that they're playing is
Blame It on the Mystery Guy. ADD, baby. Yes.
Keep singing as I narrate this next scene. I'm just kidding. Don't. Too bad we can't afford the music. Damn. Jenny and Marcus are stunned into slow motion as they turn and see Keanu Reeves. Decked out in a custom-made Tom Ford suit, adorned with a small black scarf and black-rimmed glasses.
Oh my God, it's Keanu Reeves,
Jenny says.
Keanu Reeves is a hickey guy?
Marcus asks to no one in particular. Sasha sees him and they blow kisses to each other across the room. Mwah, mwah, mwah. The star goes to surrounding tables and shakes hands and says hello to other patrons. Jenny and Marcus's mouths widen when you hear a click. Sasha has gotten up and taken a photo of the two of them and says, Surprise! I had to take a picture of your face when you saw who I'm dating. You only capture that shit once.
Yeah.
Keanu eventually makes his way to their table and he and Sasha have a mini makeout session, kissing and whispering to each other. Oh, I miss your thumbs. Oh, I miss your soul. Oh, I miss your spirit. Oh, I miss your mouth. Oh, I miss your beard. I miss your mind. I miss your heart. I miss your light, etc., etc., etc. Marcus, realizing that he is falling short in the PDA department, tries to give his beau a squeeze and she damn near brushes him off because he's blocking her Keanu Reeves view. Sasha finally makes introductions, and when she gets to Jenny, instead of Jenny shaking Kiona's hand, she melts into an embrace and I'm pretty sure smells his chest a little bit. "Now I know what it feels like to be starstruck," she murmurs. He gently pulls her off his chest and holds her by the shoulders and says, "The only stars that should strike you are the ones in the sky." Tears start streaming down Jenny's face, and she whispers, "Oh, thank you." Marcus tries changing the subject by commenting, I didn't know you wore glasses." "Oh, these?" Kiana takes them off dramatically. "They're for a part I'm playing. My eyes are perfect, see? There's no lenses in them." He sticks his finger through the holes and wiggles them around. Before they sit down, Kiana leans over to Sasha and whispers huskily, "You look stunning." And Sasha mouths, "Oh my God," like she's about to jump this man. Marcus, not to be outdone again, goes to Jenny, gives her shoulders a short squeeze and says, "You look good." Jenny, so enthralled with the scene in front of her, doesn't hear, so he says more loudly and more awkwardly, "You look good." They all sit and have the bougiest meal I have ever seen, complete with edible table arrangements, micro lettuce greens encapsulated in fish flakes, which Marcus correctly dubs fish food. "Oh, no," the waiter corrects. "We scrape the flakes off the fish's skin." "Oh," Marcus responds, "then it's fish dandruff." Then, ha, 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 ha! Kiana laughs a little too boisterously. Then the next course of clear asparagus soup, an all-black monochrome course, the flavor of Caesar salad, and finally, a dish that plays with the concept of time. A plate of venison that's served with a headset so you can hear the animal you are about to consume.
While they were still alive.
While they were still alive. Yes.
And happy.
You don't know they were happy. They could be like upset on the headset. They might know it's coming. Sasha looks unaffected by the headset main course accompaniment and gobbles down the food. Jenny, with her headset on, looks like she's contemplating the sound deeply but does not eat anything. Kiana, with his headset on, takes a few bites, solemnly breaks into tears, looks up into the sky and yells, "I'm sorry!" and then goes back to eating. And Marcus absorbs all of this with an incredulous "what the fuck is this shit" look on his face. The meal ends with crystallized lavender sugar bubbles that are blown over the table and consumed as they land. As they finish the final course, Keanu calls Marcus Henry, and he corrects him. And Keanu, without missing a beat, says, "Oh, Marcus, sorry, I hear you're in a band." "Yes," Sasha gushes. "They are so awesome. They could be really, really huge if they wanted to be." "Have I heard of you on the festival circuit?" Keanu asks. And Marcus shakes his head and says, "No, we're just a block band." "That's what it's all about," Keanu says enthusiastically. "Laboring in obscurity, starving and struggling, the man that embraces his mediocre nothingness shines brighter than us all." Keanu leaves to go take a walk, and Jenny chases after him, yelling, "I like walks too!" But they're only gone for a few moments. Once they leave, Sasha asks, "What do you think of him?" And Marcus says, I think he could dial down the theatrics a little bit.
Ugh.
"He's an actor," Sasha defends. "Are you mad about what he said?" "He's a douche," Marcus confirms. "Well, I really like him," she protests. But nothing else can be discussed because Keanu and Jenny return. "Let's go take this party back to my hotel," he offers. "What about the bill?" Marcus asks. "Oh, I already took care of it," Keanu says. "My walk was a clever ruse." "You didn't even let me fight you on paying it," Marcus sulks. Keanu says, "Well, it was $6,400. Less than a residual paycheck for speed, but a little out of your ballpark." With that, he cups Marcus's face and says, "Thank you," and walks away to go get his chariot. Jenny also leaves to get their bags, leaving the old friends alone again in the dining room. "Oh, okay," Sasha says. "I can see how you would misconstrue what the cupping of the face, but it was really a sign of affection." But Marcus doesn't buy that shit, and they bicker loudly about each other's dates. Marcus tells Sasha how ridiculous Keanu is, and Sasha retorts, "What about Jenny, Marcus?" But he cuts her off. "She's not ridiculous. She's a good person. You know what is ridiculous? Paying $6,400 for a meal and still being hungry." "Hey," he yells to the waitstaff, "can I get a monochrome burrito to go?" And leaves in a huff. "He's just kidding," Sasha says, trying to smooth the scene that he just created, and follows after him.
Jenny and Marcus meet Keanu and Sasha back at Keanu's private suite at the Fairmont. The elevator doors open on Marcus and Jenny as they wander into the expansive suite. "Hello," Marcus yells. From a distance they hear, "We're out here." They go through a couple more rooms, each one bigger than my apartment, until they see Sasha waving enthusiastically to them from a balcony. Jenny is completely wowed by everything, and Marcus is, well, Marcus. The balcony has Moroccan-style tiles and a fountain. Keanu pours everyone a drink and suggests that they play a game that the stunt coordinator from John Wick invented. It's like Truth or Dare, but a little more apocalyptic. Jenny is enchanted, and Marcus says, "Maybe we should play charades instead," sarcastically. Keanu chuckles, brushing it off and kissing Sasha on the cheek. When Marcus tries to kiss Jenny on the cheek, she flinches, says, "Ow, Marcus," and pushes him away. We wouldn't want Keanu to think that we were taken, after all, would we, Jenny?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. They move into the living room and start drawing questions from a bowl placed between them on a table. Jenny reads, "Who was your childhood crush?" Keanu says, "Oh, that's easy. Mother Teresa."
Barf!
Ew.
Gross!
Ew.
And Jenny is so samesies. They are obviously soulmates. Martin Luther King Jr.
Okay, that's a little easier to stomach than Mother Teresa.
Yes. Jenny and Keanu toast each other enthusiastically. Sasha interrupts their love fest. "My childhood crush was Marcus." Keanu and Jenny's head swivel in surprise towards Marcus. Marcus says, "What? Like, for those 2 hours in my car in Burger King?" Sasha casually says, "Nope. For 18 years, I had a crush on you. The entire time we were growing up." Marcus is incredulous. "You didn't." Sasha responds, "Yeah, the entire time." Marcus pushes back. "What about those times you shut the door on my face, told me I made weird facial expressions when I dance? What about those times?" Sasha casually says, "Oh, I was nagging you. It was supposed to get you to like me." And what have we learned from this, gentle listeners? Don't nag people. Don't nag people. Marcus has so many thoughts going through his head. "Why didn't you say something? I'd always thought maybe, but..." Keanu makes a low snoring sound from the corner of the couch he's sitting on. "Icebreaker needs to be fast-paced and you two are slowing it down." Sasha turns to Keanu. "Don't you worry, baby. That was a long time ago. I'm well over it." She gazes into Keanu's eyes and whispers, "It's your turn." Keanu looks back and they kiss, and then he puts his hand in the bowl and reads the paper he just picked up. "Who is the most disturbing person you've ever masturbated to?" Sasha says, "Gene Wilder." "Not a bad choice, Sasha." Jenny says, "Mao Zedong." Marcus is next, and he says with a dreamy look on his face, "Princess Jasmine with her midriff top." Keanu looks at him with disgust. "What kind of pervert are you?" Marcus responds, "What about Mao Zedong?" Keanu Reeves scoffs. "I'm very familiar with Chinese dignitaries, Marcus." And then he starts naming off several dignitaries, and Jenny is impressed. And I'm like, "Jenny, really? You know the human rights violations that that man was in charge of and how he tried to shut down art? Yeah, that's not sexy." While Keanu is naming said dignitaries indignantly, Marcus responds, "Okay, I get it." And Sasha steps in. "Simmer down, it's just a game. Here, I'll go next." She grabs a piece of paper from the bowl and unfolds it. "If you had to choose one person in this room to die, who would it be?" Keanu immediately thrusts his finger towards Marcus and says, "Marcus!" Who by this point in time, during the game, has a full ruby lip. Which, I'm not sure how that got there, but...
Me neither!
I think there is, like, part dare as part of this, but that color is great. But neither Jenny nor Sasha have that color on their lips. Anyways.
Just Keanu.
Sadly, no, because I wouldn't mind a little... Marcus Keanu action? Yes, please. Marcus's bow tie is untied, but he is still in his full ruffle shirt and burgundy pants, and he's sick of Keanu's shit. Fine, I'd kill you too. Keanu is gesturing towards himself in a bring it on type fashion. Men, Keanu says, staring Marcus intensely in the eyes, should face their death head on. Sasha tries to break the tension between the two of them. How about we call downstairs, see if we can get Cranium? This is all getting a little much for me. Jenny, however, has completely tuned out Sasha and is fixated on the Marcus-Keanu dynamic. I kill Marcus, she says.
What?
Says Marcus. She continues, I'm sorry, babe. Sasha and Keanu have a larger social and cultural footprint than you. I wouldn't want to do that to the world. Marcus is over it. Okay, I'm done. I don't want to play this game anymore. Keanu is not interested in Marcus backing down. He scooches across the floor to Marcus.
What is it about this game that frightens you?
Marcus is like, this is some bullshit in his head. Externally, he says, okay, Keanu, why don't you smash that vase over your head? Which is why I think there was like a whole dare proponent that we just never saw. He points to a large, clear glass cylindrical vase with a beautiful bouquet of flowers in it. Keanu reaches over to the vase, smashes it onto his head. You see how easy that was, Marcus? You see how easy that was? Marcus is thinking, what kind of hellscape have I gotten myself into? As he looks over at Keanu, who now has blood dripping down his face. This is a far cry from the Keanu he grew up with, who said things like, be excellent to each other. Instead, he's turned into Brad Pitt from Fight Club. Keanu says, okay, now I dare you. Hit me. I feel like you've been sending a lot of unspoken energy towards me. Hit me. Marcus, over it, leaps from his chair, lunging towards Keanu, clocks him in the face, and they begin to wrestle around. Keanu grabs Marcus and begins to choke him out. Sasha intervenes. Stop it! Stop it! She grabs Marcus, stares angrily at Keanu, and says emphatically, Keanu, you are a dick. Suddenly, the volume and chaos turn down, and Keanu says, well, that was an unfortunate turn of events. Please, let me call you an Uber. Sasha walks away to grab her stuff, and Jenny approaches Marcus. I'm staying. This is my one chance to talk to Keanu about the community center, and I'm not going to waste it. You can't change the world without influential people. Marcus is incredulous. So you need to know famous people to make a difference? Jenny says, it helps, and turns around with a glint in her eye to go find Keanu as Marcus and Sasha head out to their Uber. What did you think of that whole...
Jenny. That you got really close to the camera and were getting like really intense at points. And I was like, oh. I didn't want to interrupt you though, but I was like, I am so feeling this scene.
You know me.
Well done, Corinne.
I get
well
swept
done.
Away. Swept away.
And I was like, why are you looking at me like that? I'm not Marcus or Keanu. Stop it. Stop it.
You're like, why do you have the angry eyes at me? No angry eyes.
Oh, not now, but when you were in the moment, that was another story.
Marcus and Sasha. Marcus and Sasha are now safely ensconced in the back seat of their Uber, both looking pissed off. Personally, I'd be looking relieved to be the fuck out of there.
Oh my god, yes.
Marcus says, told you he was a douche. Sasha is not having it. You are just as much to blame for this, saying you'd kill Keanu for fun. Marcus is not holding back. He said he'd kill me first. What are you thinking? Do you really need someone on your arm that badly? Sasha says, just stop talking, please. Please. But Marcus is a train that will not be stopped. Choo-choo! And this whole having a kid yourself if you don't meet someone soon thing? Sasha switches her gaze from staring angrily out the window to staring angrily at Marcus. Do not repeat that to anyone. I should have never said anything to you. Marcus barrels on. Oh yeah, like if you do it, nobody will notice? Maybe. Sasha says with vitriol. I'll tell everyone that the dad died getting trampled at the Women's March. Marcus continues. Yeah, that's right. Lie to everyone just like you lie to yourself. You fill yourself so full of awards, bad boyfriends, restaurants, and events that are always go, 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 and move, move, move. You never give yourself enough time to think about anything.
Bam.
I know. I'm like, someone needs to look at the man in the mirror. Because between the two of them, guess what? Sasha has way more of her shit together than fucking Marcus.
Sure does.
Sasha is pissed. What about you, Marcus? So afraid of changing anything? You're living with your dad, have the same crappy car, and you have all this talent and you waste it? You don't do anything with it. Content to live your life in the same Sisyphean rinse, wash, repeat life day in and day out. You're just scared. Sasha stares angrily at Marcus. Marcus stares semi-wounded and pissed back. Silence has fallen between them when suddenly Marcus springs towards her, kisses her, and then hastily retreats back to his seat when Sasha pushes him away, saying, "What are you doing?" Marcus, filled with, "Oh shit," says, I don't know. I'm sorry. I have no idea what came over me. She looks at him from her corner of the car, pauses, and slowly moves forward with kiss me eyes. He moves towards her as well, and they meet in the middle, kissing passionately, not wearing seatbelts. This is no Hallmark kiss. This is some full-on sexy makeout sesh with tongues. Sasha is straddling Marcus in the back seat, and the camera pulls out so that we see the driver, who is not only wearing his seatbelt, but also has a beleaguered look on his face. And then the camera pulls out even further, and you see that they didn't just get an Uber ride. They got an Uber pool. Thanks, Keanu. There is a gent sitting in the front passenger side with a bag of groceries in his lap, looking quite uncomfortable. And we move on to the next scene.
They get to Sasha's house and do some more beer smaking out right beside the thermostat Marcus's dad installed. They are going at it hard. They are undressing themselves. They are undressing each other. They get to the stairs and Sasha jumps on Marcus and wraps her legs around his waist. And he carries her up the stairs with their legs still coiled around him. Damn it, I wish somebody would carry me up some stairs or somewhere like that. Never going to happen because I think that Ali Wong is probably like 5'2".
She's 5 foot.
Gave her an extra 2 inches. But that's my dream. Someday, somewhere. Cut this whole thing out, please.
Your secret's safe with me.
And they get up the stairs and something fierce must have happened, but all we see next is the aftermath. They're lying side by side, staring up the ceiling, panting and looking bewildered. Then Sasha starts laughing, which gets Marcus going, and she says, "Oh, you've gotten better." And he admits, "Well, I've gotten practice, and don't slut shame me." They divulge that they missed each other, and amidst all the soft talking heart to hearts, Marcus whispers, "I punched Keanu Reeves." There's a moment of silence before Sasha adds, "In the face." Marcus finishes, "Can we talk about how he got us an Uber pool? It was the worst option, and he so did that on purpose." They kiss some more and look like they are going to go at it again when the scene cuts to a Hello Peril concert.
Okay, wait. So I was so excited. I thought that you were going to do like my favorite part in the movie. I'm all, "Oh yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen." And then you say, he says softly to her, "I punched Keanu Reeves." But what he says before all of that, and I was like, "Oh, the carpet got ripped out from underneath me." He says, "I missed you," tenderly towards her. And it was really beautiful. He was just so soft and vulnerable when he said it. And I got all the feels.
I know, but we got to do some editing somewhere.
Oh, look, hey, I don't mind that you left it out. I just had to share my feelings on that part of the movie. There is plenty of stuff that I cut
it
out.
You put it right back in. You put it right back in. You're like, you didn't narrate it, but let me just go ahead and go back and just inject this little moment that I loved with my spin on the camera. Let me just help you out here.
I'm not helping you out. I'm helping out myself and my tender, tender soul.
We're both in this podcast together. We're both in this podcast together. Help me help you.
Oh,
help
I mean, me. I'm sorry. I was totally helping you. Yes. We're partners. Partners.
So just inject that little beautiful moment that Corinne Reeves told into that, like, right before the Keanu Reeves gets punched in the face moment. And we're back. The next scene cuts to a Hello Peril concert. Sasha's in the audience telling all the girls around her, "That's my boyfriend," as Marcus sings his new tennis ball song. And then Sasha yells to every girl in earshot, "You want to hit that? Don't even think about it. I will find your social security number and ruin you." Then we get to the We in Love montage. They're at the Golden Gate Park together looking at statues. Marcus boops a statue that has an exposed nipple. Then we're back at the concert. Sasha flashes the band her bra from the audience. And in the next scene, we see them kissing in front of a fountain. Things are going real, real good.
Aww.
Later, they're in Sasha's kitchen, and she's regaling him about some bitchy celebrity who she doesn't name but evidently played a cartoon teapot in a Disney movie.
Angela Lansbury.
You were not supposed to name her. We're not supposed to name her. Probably liability purposes. While she's cooking, Marcus says, "I like seeing you like this, like your old self." "Well," she answers, "thanks for reminding me what it feels like." "Like what feels like?" he asks. "Home," she answers softly and smiles.
Aww.
And he says he loves that she's back home, but they're back home in a much nicer house. I wouldn't mind being home in that house either. And then they kiss. A short while later, they're in the hospital and Veronica has finally had her baby.
Yay.
She's there with their wife, Denise, and they're sitting on the hospital bed beaming as Sasha takes the baby and cradles her in her arms. "Look at how I'm holding her," she announces, "like a natural godmother." Veronica counters, "You can't be that good of a godmother all the way from New York." Sasha argues, "Bitch, I will flip back and forth like a real fairy godmother and be wherever she needs me to be at any time." "Okay," Veronica says, "just the fact that you said bitch while holding my child proves that you are not ready." Marcus looks on concerned and asks, "Are you still planning on going to New York?" "Yeah," Sasha confirms. I was kind of thinking you'd come with me. It'd be fun, and there's plenty of dive bars there that you can play at for free." She changes the subject by growling, "I'm going to godmother the shit out of you," at the baby, to which Veronica counters, "That's strike number two."
There's times when she so reminds me of you. Like when she says, "I'm going to godmother the shit out of you." I don't think that you would cuss in front of a child, but like I could totally see you saying something like that.
Yes, I would. And I also would cuss in front of a child.
Well, when they're a baby, it doesn't matter. So, yes.
Yeah. I'm like, "You're a shitty little shit. You're a shitty. To see how, if they say that as one of their first words. Just kidding. I wouldn't do that. Or would I? A little later, Sasha and Marcus are at a gala event, and Sasha looks spectacular in a gold lamé gown, and Marcus is wearing a white t-shirt and jeans. He looks around at everyone who's wearing gowns and black ties and says, I thought you said dressing nice is out, but everyone here is in tuxes." "Oh, it's fine," she assures him. "They'll just think you're a K-pop star." They get to the entrance of the event, and the doorman looks at Marcus and smugly says, "Jackets only, please."
Mm.
Then we cut to him at the coat check, getting a jacket so large it could fit Andre the Giant. He joins Sasha, a little ashamed, in the oversized coat outside as they make their way through the throngs of people. "Ha! You look like Ellen when she used to do stand-up," she laughs. "Shut up," he admonishes. "I'm doing this for you." Waiters come by and offer him lamb carpaccio with the Caesar ice cream. "Ugh, no, thank you. Would you like a quail egg parfait?" And he says, "I'd rather shoot myself in the face, thank you." Sasha gives him a look and he says, What? I said thank you." But they finally get to the red carpet event and Sasha asks if he can hold her purse so she can take some publicity photos. While she's posing, a reporter asks about her new restaurant and how she's handling her breakup with Brandon. Sasha says very diplomatically, "I only wish Brandon the best. It was just time for us to part ways."
Mm-hmm.
"And I'm here with my new boyfriend, Marcus Kim." She gestures over to him and the paparazzi snap a bunch of photos as he
waves shyly at them. One shouts, "Is he a chef too?" And she says, "Oh, no, 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 no. He's in heating and air. He's just a normal guy." Marcus's face falls at that description, and the photographers quickly lose interest and move on to the next notable person.
Oh, I don't think calling him a normal guy is such an insult, particularly when he was called a mediocre nothingness.
She could have called him an aspiring artist, like a singer. True. She could have said he's the lead singer of Hello Peril. Check out their music. Give him a plug.
That's what she totally should have done. What the hell? You've let me down in this instance, Sasha. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Do better, Sasha.
Some time has passed, and Sasha and Marcus are getting ready to go to the opening of Saintly Fair. Sasha's in the bathroom getting ready. Oh, I'm so nervous. The last event was nothing compared to this. Marcus, shaving, says, "I'm sure glad this is the last event for a while." Sasha says, "Yeah, but next week is New York. You're coming with me, right?" Marcus pauses mid-razor stroke. "Well, I'm not sure if that's doable. I've got my dad and the Southeast audition." Sasha takes a breath. "That's fine. Come after the audition." Marcus dismissively says, "Eh, maybe. When are you coming back to San Francisco?" Sasha looks at him, puzzled. "I'm not. I'm moving on to the next thing." Marcus is not leaving this one alone. He's determined to fuck shit up. "Oh, that's right, because you're a celebrity chef. What a douchey term. You know what other term I hate? Elevated Asian cuisine. It's not supposed to be elevated. It's supposed to be authentic. That is what you used to make with my mom, not like what you make now. You're just catering to rich white people." Sasha is pissed about him, passive-aggressively talking about her and then aggressively talking about her. "If you think I'm such a sellout, why are you dating me?" Marcus bitterly says. "And if I'm such a regular guy, why are you dating me?" Sasha says, "Really? I called you a regular guy as a compliment. You aren't caught up in all the bullshit." Marcus is really in self-destruction mode tonight as he says, "Oh, the way you are?" Sasha finally raises her voice. "Don't shame me for going after things, Marcus. You're so scared to do anything new." Marcus, in a final death-defying act of relationship destruction, responds, "I'm not scared. I just don't want to be some dude on your arm so you don't have to show up to places alone." Sasha says, "What's wrong with supporting me? If it were the other way around, no one would question it." Marcus then doubles down on idiotic things to say. "You don't support me. You hate the band." Sasha is pissed. "I don't hate the band. I love it. She goes to all his fucking concerts. What the hell, Marcus? What the hell?"
Yeah.
I think it's great. Too great to be limiting itself by playing only in that shithole night after night. Marcus responds, "I love that shithole. I'm sorry it's not elevated enough for you." Sasha is done. "You know what, Marcus? Don't come tonight." She picks up her handbag and heads out the door to the waiting car. Marcus, suddenly struck with regret, runs out on the balcony in front of the house. "Sasha, I'm sorry. I didn't mean..." Sasha turns around and cuts him off. "I love you, Marcus. I've loved you since we were kids. You don't need to do the things I do, but I want to share my life with you. I want to be with you, come home to you. Even when you're an asshole, I still choose you. After the opening, I'm going to go to New York. And if you don't want to come with me, just say it." There's a moment of silence as they both look at each other. Marcus in front of the house, Sasha in front of the car. Marcus finally speaks. "I don't want to go to New York with you." Sasha shakes her head and heads into the car where she cries on her way to the restaurant opening. Yay! Restaurant opening!
Ooh, fun.
Happy day!
He pulls for the camera, holding back my tears.
Sasha leaves for New York and Marcus resumes his regularly scheduled programming. but is it? Marcus Hunt comes home and yells into the house, "Hey, Dad, I got us some." And then he looks over to see his dad making out with the Diana Ross impersonator. "What the fuck? Dad?" Marcus says. "Marcus," he says, tugging down his shirt. "Donna Summer?" Marcus says. "Diana Ross," she says. "Kathy?" Dad says. "Marcus," he says, gesturing towards his son and girlfriend. "Now that we've all met, who wants some dinner?" While Kathy waits patiently in the living room by herself to give them some time to talk, Marcus joins his dad in the kitchen while his dad cooks dinner. Turns out they've been dating since the birthday party, but he never told Marcus because he wasn't sure how Marcus would react. Because Marcus is so good with change of anything, you know. He just really rolls with those punches.
Mm-hmm. So much so that his dad's still protecting him.
Yeah, because he didn't just get into a huge blowout argument with Sasha over him going to New York or anything.
Yeah, nope. Did not happen. Absolutely not. Nope.
Dad says, "I know Sasha's left for New York. Why didn't you go with her?" Marcus scoffs. "I can't just leave. I have responsibilities. The business, the band, you. I'm your caretaker." At this point, I'm surprised that Dad hasn't fallen down on the floor with laughter as he's making dinner for his grown son that still lives at home. Dad says, "Excuse me? I don't need a caregiver. You're using me as an excuse not to live your life." Marcus finally says what's on his heart. You lost Mom, and I can't leave you, too." Dad stirs the pot in front of him and then turns to his son. "We both lost your mom, but it was her time to go. I thought if I gave you space that you'd be able to go and move on. But you've just sat here and let the world pass you by. It kills me to see you like this. I know it would have broken your mom's heart." Then Dad smiles warmly at Marcus. "At some point, you're going to have to take a chance on something. Now be nice to Kathy and let's eat." And Dad moves out to the dining room.
I thought for a second when your old dad stirs the pot, I'm like, oh, is the shit going to hit the fan? You're like, no, literally Dad is stirring the pot as he's making dinner.
Yeah, he's making a pot of stew, which should actually be like simmering for hours on the stovetop because he just put raw meat in there. But, you know, we're just going to overlook that.
Marcus goes to Southie's for their audition before everybody. It's a dive bar slightly above Raga's. He is pre-gaming when his band comes in, taking shots at the bar with the bartender. They ask, what's going on? Because this isn't like him. And the bartender shares, it's a breakup. They are dumbfounded that he broke up with Sasha, but Marcus assures them, I'm fine. No one knows me on this side of town, and I'm cool with that. Let's do this.
Oh.
On the stage, he absolutely motherfucking sucks. He doesn't know the lyrics. He's slurring. He stops mid-song to piss on an amplifier. I'm going to venture a guess that he did not win the audition. Backstage, his bandmates are understandably pissed. They call him selfish, self-centered, but Marcus doesn't want to hear it. Tell me I'm better off without her. Tell me I don't need her in my life. Tony says, I don't know what to tell you. And Marcus argues, I'm literally telling you exactly what to say to me. He sighs.
Excellent drunk Marcus.
I have lots of experience. Being drunk, not being drunk Marcus. Tony sighs and says, you messed up, man. And they all leave him there. Next, we see Marcus making changes. He's leaving voicemails for Sasha, which play over his steps towards moving on with his life. He's cleaning out his room while saying, beep. I am so sorry. I know this is probably too little too late. I'm going to keep on trying. Beep. Next, he's at an audition at Southie's. Beep. Hey, it's me. We got another chance at Southie's and we killed it. Also, I don't know if you got the link I messaged you, but look it over. I took over the merch from Quasar and we are killing it. Totally crazy. Beep. Okay, I know you're probably sick of hearing from me, but I got my own place. It's small, but most importantly, it's shitty. But it's right by your restaurant, so I'm going to stop by to see if you're in town. Beep. Sasha's in her penthouse in New York when somebody knocks on her door. It's her parents.
Yay!
They say, surprise!
surprise and share that they used some of their airline vouchers and found her address on the Google. "You didn't have to come all the way out here," she protests. But they heard that the Food and Wine magazine was giving her a big important prize. She still looks less than thrilled, and her mom continues, "I know you're mad at us for not being around when you were younger." "Not around?" Sasha scoffs. "You left me alone all day." "Well," her mother counters, "we're trying to make up for it now." She reaches into her pocket and hands her daughter a receipt, explaining, "We went to your new restaurant in San Francisco and paid full price for everything." "Yes," her dad agrees, "and there were so many photos that we could have brought to prove that we were related, but we didn't bring them." "No way," Sasha says, and mother adds, "and we even got extra shrimp." Sasha is dumbfounded because that's never happened before in her freaking life.
That was my most favorite scene. It was such a beautiful show of parental love.
We paid full price.
Well, for them, that's a huge thing. If my parents like gave me a receipt and said that they paid full price, I'd be like, "Yeah, I know you like a deal, but it doesn't mean that much." But yeah. Her parents are like, "Tuck and roll, baby, tuck and roll. Avoid that dip." Marcus enters Saintly Fair, hoping to see Sasha there, and gets stopped by the gorgeous non-binary host of the restaurant. Their short hair with a long bang, gorgeous eyebrow, eye, and lip, along with a white button-down shirt with a black t-shirt over the top and a black tie on top of that, look is perfection. They say, "Sir, may I help you?" Marcus asks hopefully, "Is Sasha Tran here?" The host looks dismissively down. "I'm afraid not." Marcus is not giving up that easily. "What about Veronica? We go way back." The host looks up at him, narrows their eyes, and says, "She's in the office upstairs." As soon as Marcus heads upstairs, the host picks up the phone. "Hi, Veronica. There's a very middle-class man on his way up to see you." Marcus heads up to the office and pokes his head into Sasha Tran's office, which is filled with Hello Peril merch. Instead of him having a curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal moment, which is what I would have had, because I would have been like, "I thought I was selling all this merch, but I guess I'm not." When he realized that most of their orders were going to her, instead it stirs hope in his heart. Veronica enters the office. "Hey," Marcus turns around. "Hey, Veronica, I thought she didn't want anything to do with me. Why would she do this?" Veronica looks at him with wide eyes. "Wow, you cute, but you dumb." And she turns around and walks out of the room. The brain hamster in Marcus's mind starts spinning on the wheel, and suddenly the pieces come together. He's got to get that girl. First stop, Tom Ford, where they start fitting him for a suit. And the guy who helps him is a prince in one of the Hallmark movies.
Oh.
Uh-huh. They start fitting him for a suit until he sees the price tag. $12,500. I was like, no. A few thousand dollars, I'd be like, that's crazy, but okay. $12,500? No.
Yeah. They think Marcus agrees because doesn't he like, "Get it off me, it burns. Get it off now."
That's exactly what he did, and your imitation was perfection. He leaps out of the clothes and runs out the door to suits and stuff, which had a great deal for him. And if he'd been watching Queer Eye, he would know that Tan Fran says that you can take a basic bitch suit, and if you get it tailored nicely, it can look perfection. The next evening in New York City, New York City, Sasha is being honored as the visionary of the year by Food and Wine magazine. When she walks the red carpet in a beautiful white sheath dress with a pearl white box clutch, one of the photographers yells, "Hey, Sasha, who's your date tonight?" And she says, "Couldn't decide on just one, so I brought two." And I'm thinking, has Jenny inspired you to go polyam? But no, she gestures over to her parents saying, "Quack and Sandy Tran." They walk up next to her, very proud. Suddenly, there's another voice. A familiar voice that shouts out from the photographers, "I have a question." Sasha starts searching the crowd. Marcus? Marcus pushes his way into the front of all the media. What are you doing here? Marcus has been waiting for this moment and looks great in his cheap suit. I came here to find you. I tried figuring out some epic way to say this, but I can't. So I'm just going to say it badly. I want to be where you are. I don't care where, what clothes I have to wear. If I have to eat a lot of tiny, pretentious things, I'll do it. I just want to be with you. I want to make you laugh. I want you to call me out when I'm not pushing myself hard enough. And I want to have a lot of sex with you. I should have left that part out. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to cheapen it. I want to have a family with you, to share my life with you, even if I'm scared every step of the way. You are worth it, Sasha Tran. Can I hold your purse for you? Sasha looks at him. That was the bad version? Marcus says, it was good? Yeah, I loved it, Sasha responds. Sasha's mom yells, kiss already! And Marcus steps over the velvet rope towards her and they kiss! And it's a beautiful and good and long and everyone loves it and they stare with hard eyes at each other. And Tam's doing a happy dance.
Doing a happy dance.
I think you like the kiss too then, huh?
A little bit. I love their kiss. I love their makeout session. I love them together.
Aww. Sasha accepts her award. Her parents are so proud. At the end of the evening, her parents have long returned to where they're staying, and Sasha and Marcus are sitting at a banquet table, looking at each other happily. You still hungry? Says Sasha. Marcus says, starving. The main course was a rice noodle wrapped around a fig. Sasha laughs. Lucky for you. I know a great new place. She takes him to her new restaurant, and Marcus looks around. I love it. It's so different from your other restaurants. The feeling is so much more homier. Beautiful but simple round wood tables occupy the main part of the restaurant. The walls are green and there's a bar off to the side. She approaches a guy who is cooking something in a large pot. He steps to the side and she stirs the pot and looks lovingly inside. Marcus takes a gander as well. It's just like my mom's. Sasha is stirring a giant stock pot of kimchi. She shows him a menu. The restaurant is named Judy's Way, after Marcus's mom, and the menu is filled with traditional Korean food. Sasha looks at Marcus, who is taking it all in. It's all her recipes. I want to make food that makes people feel at home, the way your mom made me feel. Marcus looks at her with tears in his eyes. This is everything, he says, touching his heart, and they hug tenderly. Next, we see the restaurant opening night, and Mr. Kim and his girlfriend Kathy have been flown out to be special guests. Veronica approaches her, and yes, Sasha gets to be the godmother. Next, we see Marcus at the bar with Tony as they cheers to taking Hello Peril to the East Coast, and Marcus says, you look marvelous. Is that a medium? He responds, European slim cut, baby. Ooh, I'm so hungry all the time, he says. Marcus approaches Sasha. I'm so proud of you, he says, and they pan over to the painting that Judy did of her family. Judy is in the center with Marcus on one side and Dad on the other. Finally, we close out with Marcus's Keanu Reeves song. Best believe I punched Keanu Reeves as they show childhood pics of the actors.
The end. That song slaps.
So, Tamara, what did you think of this movie?
Oh, my gosh. I love Ali Wong ever since I saw her do her pregnant stand-up special. I love Randall Park ever since I saw him in Fresh Off the Boat. I think they did great together. I don't want to give two non-Hallmark movies 5 stars in a row because I gave my last non-Hallmark Fifth Tuesday movie a 5.
Ugh. But this one is so much better than that one. I know that one is a sentimental fave of yours, but I mean,
that is a sentimental favorite. And that was me like, nobody else is going to understand why I'm giving this a 5. But this movie has to get a 5. I love, 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 love it. I laughed out loud. I loved Keanu Reeves playing himself in such a douchey way and being so game about it. I love the storyline. I love the fact that it was in San Francisco. I love the fact that I recognized all the songs. And I was like, oh my God, I lived in San Francisco when that song was out. Love, love, love it. Love, 5 stars. 5 kisses. 5 kisses.
Dermot Timmer, 5 kisses.
5 kisses and 5 stars. It's just that good. What do you give it, Corinne?
Well then, I will also give it 5 dry kisses, or maybe 5 wet ones, because this has a lot more action than any Hallmark movie ever will see.
Yep.
It actually had a little bit of size diversity in there, which we don't really ever see in any of the movies that we watch, because Michelle Buteau was representing for people who were not as thin as toothpicks, and everybody else in the movie was very average to very thin sized. But
Quasar wasn't.
Quasar! I forgot about Quasar. Oh, love Quasar. Excuse me, I'm just going to have a moment alone with Quasar.
Also, Sasha's cousin wasn't that...
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of a little on the huskier side. Not in a bad way, but no. He had some meat on his bones.
Yeah, no, he was thicker. I don't really like to talk about, like, what people look like in proportion to their body, but I do like... I do think that body diversity in movies is very important. You know, representing different people of different shapes and sizes is super good. Anywho... a tiny bit of that. So, yay. And it had a lot of diversity. It had a non-binary person represented as well. I felt like on the diversity front, it was super strong. And on the storyline front, it was super duper duper strong. Big props to Ali Wong and Randall Park for writing a fantastic movie that was funny and had tension, but legitimate tension, and swooped into a beautiful resolution.
You know, this puts me in mind of one of the things I also loved about this movie was the authenticity of how they portrayed San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Yeah.
I remember not too long ago, I am ashamed to admit, watched a movie by Woody Allen years back that he had in San Francisco, quote unquote.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And everybody in the movie was white or Italian with an East Coast accent. And I'm like, where exactly do you think you fucking are, sir? Like, that is not San Francisco. And I think this movie portrayed San Francisco perfectly. Chef's kiss. Mwah.
Yeah. Well, the majority of it was recorded in Hallmark Town. They spent 5 to 7 days in San Francisco shooting. So they did a lot of location shooting. And in a Hallmark movie, that would be half of their shooting schedule right there. Right there. Because they whip out those movies in 2 weeks, baby. They did not whip out this movie in 2 weeks. I am sure of it.
I would have liked to see more Filipino representation. Did not see a lot of Filipino representation. And when I worked in the Bay Area, huge Filipino population and also very good food.
Do you have any last words of wisdom about...
I do not. I would just recommend highly everybody to go see this movie. It is a barrel of laughs. It is a really good choice. Great way to spend a couple hours of your day.
And it's on Netflix. There's no commercials. It's a sweet, sweet ride.
A sweet, sweet commercial-free ride in the back of a Toyota Corolla where you could just make out with it and just not have an awkward silence because it's just that good.
Car sex is so awkward. If you would like to write us about car sex, have anything you want to say, share a movie with us, anything like that, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or ping us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, where we occasionally post, and you can also contact us. We are One Dry Kiss at all of those places.
One spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time, we would love to hear your ratings and reviews, or we would love to see your ratings and reviews. So please give us 5 stars if you liked our show. Let us know what you think. Do we have a new review out?
Oh, yes, we do.
I have a review left recently by Johnny17. He writes, "Most amazing podcast, ! Such legends. Absolutely hysterical. Thanks for making my year so much better." Aw, thank you, Johnny 17. Legends, I like that.
And next week, we will be moving into September, where we are doing competition reality-type show Hallmark movies.
We're still workshopping the title.
The title was smooth. I thought I did it perfect, but, you know, whatever.
Really smooth.
Uh-huh.
I think we should just record that and just put it at the beginning of every episode for the next month.
And we're starting off with Tamara's pick, which is...
Oh, the Beverly Hills Wedding one, which Corinne tried to sway me against. She's like, oh, no, you don't want that. And I'm like, yes, I do.
I wasn't trying to sway you against it. I was just giving you facts.
You have glowing endorsement of, oh, that one's not that great.
But I did say it's got an awesome gay couple in it.
That does. Okay, so we will be covering that. We will be bringing that to you next week. But until then, we will bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah. Mwah.
Goodbye.
See you next time.
Running. I'm just going to keep snapping. I don't know the rest of the lyrics.